back. This is Lee from Huntsville Inn for Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. And I am moving on to my next dipper, but real quickly, I will mention a text from Glenn from Bluntsville and says, how many city council have had parents removed from the meeting by the police for reading the same books in the children's section out loud during the meeting? I know that's happened in a lot of areas. I will say most recently we had a pastor, Amanchukwu, who at the Come to the Hoover meeting. He's well known for going to meetings all over the United States, and he reads from the books that are in those particular schools, and they did not have him removed, and he read some pretty dicey stuff. So I have to give it to them. At least Hoover allowed it. I haven't seen any in Alabama removing them, and I'm hoping they don't, because if that's in there for your kids to read, you dang sure better listen to it. So, but now I'm going to move on to the NIL. So NIL issues. And I actually have a caller on the line. Full disclosure, my best friend. She is Dee, and Dee has she's a high level collegiate athlete, national champion. She has an understanding of athletics, and I'm going to get her opinion on the NIL and the transfer portal and a few other issues. So Dee, you on?
Hey, what's up, Right Side?
Thank you for coming on to give your expert opinion.
I don't know how expert it is, but I'm happy to give it. You know that.
Well, I mean, you know, you were a high-level collegiate athlete, so I think it's pretty good. I happened to notice that a article from clutchpoints.com, and it says, Alabama football, Nick Saban doubles down on NIL issues that led to retirement, where he's basically saying it's not a secret at this point, but when Nick Saban was asked what role NIL and current climate played in retirement, he said, all the things I believed in for all these years of coaching, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. And even going far to say his wife, Terry, who's very, very important to him, and everyone in Alabama athletics know this, she looked at him and said, why are we doing this? So I want to hear from you. What do you think about that? And how do you think it's affecting the climate of college sports?
Well, I mean, first, I just want to say that the second he retired, I knew that's what it was about. I mean, as soon as I heard about it.
You did call it.
In fact, I'm on the I called it. I'm on the record with receipts. Thank you. I immediately did a post on X, and I was like, this is why he's leaving. And I'm paraphrasing what I said, but it was really, you know, something along the lines of, you know, there's two things that Nick Saban, two reasons that he coaches. And it's the same two reasons that he's coached since the day he first started coaching. And one is to bring young men into maturity, to sort of do the boys to men thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to teach them values and to sort of strengthen them in their moral character, their ethics, their work ethic, all of that. So it's sort of like it's life skills is one of the reasons. And then the other reason is because he needs 3 years total, 3 years in a row to develop talent. Right. And it's the 3 years in a row that's key.
Right.
Because, you know, NCAA football players are not eligible to leave early for the draft until after their junior season.
Right.
So it's 3 full years with an athlete to be able to develop their talent to the degree that they are able to then go to the next level and compete and be drafted as highly as possible, et cetera, et cetera. You know, earn a living that can change their entire family for generations.
Right.
So those are the top two reasons why he was even coaching. I, of course, I'm sounding like I just had a conversation with him yesterday, which I didn't, but I just know this to be true about him. and so he is, you know, when you have now the ability to have a bidding war, essentially,
mm-hmm.
for an 18-year-old who's coming out of college, their frontal lobe isn't even all the way formed. they in no way, I don't care how good or not good their parental situation is, no 18-year-old is equipped. Even Tim Tebow at 18 was not mature enough to make a sound decision about the value of his talent and whether and where he should be playing football, based whether, you know, if, with it being solely based on money. So if you, when you remove something like the integrity of the sport, the fact that, you know, NCAA is no longer NCAA, it's just NCA now.
Right. Because the amateur part's not there.
Correct. The amateur part is gone. So now it's just the National Association of Collegiate Athletes or whatever. National, what is it? National Association of Collegiate Amateur Athletes.
Right.
The amateur is gone now. There's
right.
no amateur anymore. So in the absence of that, what do you have? You have a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds, God bless them, but you know, there's now these bidding wars for them because they're, you know, they could be influencers and they have a big TikTok deal.
Mm-hmm.
Or and so they're bringing that sort of cachet to the university. It's very much now not about talent and developing that talent, getting them ready for the next level, which, again, very small percentage of them will even go to the next level. And an even smaller percentage of those people are going to make any real money, right, as an a semi-professional in the NCAA. So
how does that help them? How does it help them? Because they're not getting that that valuable instruction year to year if they're jumping or moving.
There's several tiers of it, right? So there's the athletes who are you know, promising athletes coming out of high school, or they may have had one good year in college, and they enter the portal because another school has said, we really want to fill this slot. We need this talent in this position. We're going to pay them more money than the current school is paying, and we're going to outbid them, right? So there's that athlete. And then, you know, a lot of times what ends up happening is either an injury or the talent just doesn't quite shake out.
Right.
It doesn't always translate.
Will you hold through this break and come and then back on the next segment so we can finish fleshing this out a little bit more?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Okay, guys, we will be right back. And we're back. This is Lee from Huntsville in for Phil Williams while he's out doing some lawyer things. Right Side Radio covering all in North Alabama. Solid conservative in just plain right. Talking with my good friend Dee about the NIL.
Good friend. I am your best
okay,
friend.
Okay, best friend.
You.
I'm so sorry. And let me clarify. Someone asked, what is the NIL? And I apparently should have clarified that on the front end. Name, image, and likeness. It is a process for which the players can receive compensation for the use of their name, image, or likeness. But it's kind of been warped a bit. So let's talk about how these players are getting paid. What differences are being made between, like, how is it affecting the locker room? Is everybody getting paid? Let's talk about that.
Okay, so no, not everybody's getting paid, and that's one of the reasons that it is cancerous in a locker room. Again, these are 18 to 22-year-olds. There's already, like, abnormal levels of testosterone flying around. And when you add, you know, the competitiveness of some people driving around in such and such and wearing such and such and being able to purchase such and such and other players not being able to do that, human nature dictates that it could get funky, right? And there could be some jealousy, which could inevitably lead to discord both in and off the field or the court or whatever.
Right.
This is what I have always thought. Now, I'm speaking as a former athlete who, if NIL would have existed when I was competing, I don't say this boastfully, but I would have been on a Tua or a Bryce Young level. Right. And I have to say that, what I believe should have happened and should happen as it relates to athletes making money is that, one, if it's an athlete who is actually changing the program, and mm-hmm. by that I mean they're selling merchandise, right? You see their jerseys on people in the stadium every single week. with their name and number on it, right?
Like a tuna.
Correct. And they are, you know, a generational player like that, or a legacy player. And they're changing sort of the economy, right, of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think that they are entitled to a percentage of those sales. I absolutely do. However, I think it should be put into trust until after they graduate. Not after they go pro, but after they graduate. That's mm-hmm. one. Then you have this other tier of athletes who are never going to have, you know, anything sold in, you know, Bama Fever or the soup store with their name and number on it, but they may have an opportunity to get an endorsement deal or endorsement deals and do brand deals
mm-hmm.
and be influencers on social media. That's a different tier of athlete. And this is just me as having competed in, you know, on a team where there's all kinds of different personalities and different demands and practice and travel and school and, you know, all the things that come with being a student athlete. And I personally think that it's a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that there's a short window of time where some of these athletes may even be relevant. Maybe they're not relevant anymore the second they finish their last game because they're not going to go pro.
Right.
And I'm in no way of the camp of no one should be getting paid, period. That I'm not in that camp. But I do think it should be a much more regulated process. I think that there should be qualifiers about who is eligible. And I don't think anybody should be having a bidding war for their talent straight out of high school. I think that sets a really bad precedent.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sends absolutely the wrong message to an 18-year-old who already maybe have some delusions of grandeur about themselves in the first place. You know, college used to be, especially your freshman year, it used to be a very humbling experience, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
you realize that you're, you know, you may have been the man on campus as a senior in high school or the woman on campus as a senior in high school, but then you get to be a freshman and the playing field is level, more level as far as talent, right? And so I think it's really kind of robbing athletes of that humility and that exercise in humility and being able to experience the full breadth of what it means to be a collegiate athlete. You have to kind of earn your stripes all over again. You're starting at the bottom rung again, right? And then if they do go pro, it happens again when they're a rookie, right? And I think sort of eliminating that part of the equation and not allowing coaches to actually just be coaches, but now they're brokers,
mm-hmm.
right? They're agents, they're managers. And I think it sets a really bad precedent. I think it's going to implode. I think it's going to ruin locker rooms. I think it's going to take something of disastrous proportion before they take another step back and look at it and say, okay, Nick Saban retiring was not enough to make us look at it, but XYZ will be. I hate that.
Where does education fall in this? It's like the education part takes a wee back seat.
Well, I mean, first of all, they've already devalued the education piece by saying that a full scholarship isn't enough. You know,
right.
I mean, they're saying
right.
a lot of these athletes are on full scholarship and they're saying that's not money. That's not real money. I'm sacrificing my safety and my life. And okay, well, it's a game you choose to play.
Right.
Okay. No, there's no one's being threatened. This isn't communist China. It's not Russia. No one's family is being threatened and forced to go to Siberia if they don't compete. You chose to do this. Football is dangerous. That's part of what it is. You don't get rewarded because it's dangerous. You're choosing
yeah.
a choice. You get to play it. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not get off my lawn about it. I know I may sound like that a little bit right now, and maybe there's a pinch of that, but I'm not against athletes being paid. I'm against them being paid at a certain age and with these sort of open parameters, you know, where it's just kind of a free for all and a bidding war for basically people who are just brand new into adulthood. They don't have the maturity to
yeah.
deal with this. And by the way, no kid should be supporting their family either.
Right.
I mean, this is Right Side Radio, right? I can say that. So
absolutely.
I don't want to hear, I got to support my family. You know what I mean? Like, they shouldn't be supporting their families. They're children. This is an 18-year-old. They should be concentrating on school, getting
right.
their education, and which that's a whole other conversation because what is the education? But they also should be concentrating on honing this skill and developing it to a point of mastery.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that if your focus is divided, you just can't. And the education piece is definitely lost in that. The transfer portal really is, in my opinion, the real belly of the beast, because mm-hmm. that is completely unregulated. There's no parameters around it at all. They can go, you know, any athlete can say, I don't like that this happened in practice, and jump in the portal. It totally disrupts the season. It disrupts the offense or the defense or the special teams format. Like, everything is messed up. I'm also only talking about football right now.
Right.
But, I mean, it messes everything up if it's not regulated. They should have to finish a season. You can't just leave in the middle of the year. And so it just puts everyone in a bad position. It smacks of the opposite of sportsmanship. And I think all of this was just not in any way meaningfully considered when they just said, let's bow to the pressure of paying them. And it just, I think that, you know, when you lose a Nick Saban,
mm-hmm.
right, who easily has another 20, 25 years of coaching left. Let's be honest.
Is he going to be hungered?
That man literally was going to, like, step off the field and into his final resting place. Like, that is how it was going to go down.
That's how we wanted it to go down.
And I think that's how he wanted. I don't know if it was Terry, but I think that's how he wanted it to go down. And he, you know, he was kind of forced out. NIL and the transfer portal are the Nick Saban rules.
So,
it's unofficial, but they are the Nick Saban rules. These things exist because nobody could beat him. Period.
So you think they used it to break up dominating teams and
100%. I think there's really, you know, just sort of everyone has Alabama fatigue, has SEC fatigue,
mm-hmm.
and that's one. And two, I also think that, you know, it's not like he's never lost. You know, he's lost some big games, but he's in the conversation every year.
Right.
And I think he was in the championship conversation every year. And I think, you know, they tried BCS. That didn't work. He completely dominated that. Then they did the playoff. That didn't work. He completely dominated that. So that now they're like, okay, let's just pay him. Let's just pay the athletes. The only way we can beat this guy is to pay more than he can pay.
So how does this stop a team like, I don't know, with endless bottomless money, like say a Texas, from just buying a team every single year, the best possible team?
Yeah. I mean, I think what will eventually happen is if that does happen, and I think that is a real reality, I think it's very possible that could happen. I mm-hmm. think then is when the governing body will say, okay, this is, you know, officially a monopoly, and we have to do something to regulate this. Like, we can't just have people buying teams and doing, you know, and winning, you know, national championship after national championship with a completely different roster every year.
Right.
It's not equitable.
Right.
So I don't, but I think it will take something like that happening where it's a different starting lineup every single year before they say, okay, this is not tenable and it's not sustainable.
I agree. And I think but the sad thing is it's going to take something like that. And in the meantime, I think it's going to do some damage to the popularity of the sport. I think you're going to find, you know, I think it is going to take a hit, but I appreciate you coming on.
Well, it's robbing the athletes of the innocence of truly competing. And if I can just say that one of my favorite things about being a collegiate athlete, it was just the purity of competition.
Yeah.
That's the sweet spot. That's the gold. And it's about, you know, may the best people on gym floor, on the football field, on the basketball court, in the baseball diamond, may the best win that day.
Yeah.
That day. Right. And when you get to the that day part, when it's an SEC championship or a national championship, what has happened all year is that you have congealed as a team.
Right.
What has happened all year is that you've learned how to play with each other.
Right.
You've learned how each other, you just know how each other moves. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you can predict each other's behavior. It's a real team. That is what's being stolen from them, I think. Ultimately, they're robbing these athletes of pure competition.
I agree. Well, thank you for coming on. I appreciate your input. And
yeah.
I'll call you later.
Absolutely.
Right.
See you later.
Bye.
Talk to y'all later. Thanks for having me on. Bye, right side.
Enjoyed it. Okay, well, we will be right back. with some final words to wrap up the show today. Appreciate you guys hanging on with me.